You're listening to the News Project Podcast for the week of September 21st, 2020, brought to you by GNAT TV. This podcast brings you these stories: Teaching During COVID, the Success Program, and BioBlitz at Merck Forest.
Schools are off to an unusual start this year, mixing remote learning with in-person classroom instruction, with teachers sometimes doing both at the same time. Between extracurricular activities and school athletics, now finally able to resume inter-school games after September 26th, it's been a different back-to-school experience for teachers, students, administrators, and parents in a year that's been very different in general, for everybody. As part of an ongoing series we're launching, we'll be looking at how certain kinds of classes and schools are adapting to this new, and for the moment, new normal. We start with the Success Program at Burn Burton Academy, which aims to reach out to students who might be in search of a longer-range plan for what they might want to do after they finish high school. Jason Pergament is the program director, and Billy Canfield is the associate program director, who described how it was going. The program has now grown to include more than 200 of the roughly 800 students at Burn Burton.
I mean, I guess I look at the COVID emergency in two phases. You know, there was the immediate emergency, the quarantine, the being stuck at home, and then us all scrambling to figure out how to best meet those needs. And then phase two is what we're dealing with now, which is a lot more intentional, a lot more organized, a lot more, I think intentional is the right word. So what we've got going on now, I feel really good about, because we've had a whole summer to prepare ourselves for it. Now moving into this year, it's another level of complication, because now we have kids who have a concept of online learning based on spring, and that's no longer what online learning looks like. You know, in the spring, for instance, I think a big example that I think illustrates what I'm saying is whether or not their Zoom cameras are on. So in the springtime, we felt bad for kids. We felt like we're not going to force them to put the cameras on because their home environments might not be healthy. I can think of one young man who's like, look, my stepdad's always drunk, he's always in his underwear, and he's always cursing. Please don't make me put my camera on. And we can understand that, because the kid didn't want to be embarrassed by what was happening in his home. But now that we have systems in place, we need the kids who are at home, because kids are at home half time and they're at school half time. We need the kids who are at home to actually have their cameras on and participate in class. And so we're trying to kind of revive or reestablish those norms and those expectations that kids will engage even when they're home. And that's tough. And we do have a few kids who the online learning, even if it's hybrid or part-time, is still not productive. And so those kids, we're trying to find ways to have them come to campus full-time and create really individualized programs for those kids.
One of the tools that Pergament and Canfield employ to build confidence, academic proficiency, and appreciation for the value of education, collaboration skills, and a mindset of perseverance and optimism, which are among the goals of the Success Program, is a meditation class, which Mia Grigsby, one of the students in their audiovisual program, recorded a part of. Here, the two program directors merge in-person instruction with another group of students dialing in from locations off campus.
Glad to hear that. So those of you that are at home, I'm going to ask for all of you at home to think about what you can do for the next... I guess I can stop this. I ask you guys at home what you can do to center and relax yourself for the next few minutes while we meditate here, all right? But I really want to be stressing that it's something that is calming and centering. Listening to music, coloring, writing poems. Are you guys at home? Do you have any, like, what are some things you guys are going to do for meditating right now? What are some meditative actions that you might take?
Listen to music.
Who's that, Olivia?
And Yeah.
Okay. And again, remember I said yesterday, if we're listening to music, just listen to music, okay? Sit somewhere comfortable, listen. Don't be trolling social media at the same time. Allow yourself to relax and do one thing, okay? But that's a good thing to do, is listening to music. Is someone going to do something different other than listening to music? Jack, what are you going to do, Jackson?
Probably going to read.
Yeah, reading. Read a book that's pleasurable. Don't do homework. Do something that's interesting to you, okay? And just read. Put your phone down and just read for a few minutes. Guys in class, we're going to try something different because I think it's still wet outside and I don't want us sitting outside where it's wet. What we're going to do is we're going to clear space in the middle of the room to sit, okay? So what we're going to do is those tables are going to get pushed out. Those tables are going to get pushed out. That table is going to get twisted to the back of the room. This table is going to get twisted to the front of the room, and then we'll have an empty space in the middle where we can sit in the classroom.
As the program has grown, more than doubling the number of students enrolled in it over the past 2 years, it's also evolved, Bergerman said.
I think one thing for sure is numbers-wise. You know, when we first started the success program, each cohort had like 23 to 30 kids. But word of mouth has spread so that there's much more interest in people having their kids participate. So now our cohorts are 50 to 60 kids a year. So we're just dealing with a much larger mass of students. I also think that the effect of poverty continues to unpack itself in our community. And so the needs of these students, and probably it was always like this, but it's becoming much more evident that the needs are far more than just educational needs. These kids really need full wraparound services. They need not just educational support, but they also need social emotional support. And so this is where, you know, we hired Billy to come in with the social emotional aspect, the counseling aspect, and social work. We've also expanded our course offerings. We have a dual enrollment class that we do in partnership with CCV in Bennington. And this class is called Introduction to College and Careers. And it's a class for upperclassmen to start thinking about their post-secondary plans. What do they want to do for a career? And then what are actionable steps to take to realize those career goals? And so actually we have a CCV professor who comes in and teaches that class twice a week. And then the other 3 days a week, we help those kids to complete the college level work for the professor. So it's a really interesting hybrid. We also have a senior workshop class where we work with seniors to actually complete their college applications. That's the class we just had in here now. And we're not supplanting our school's college counseling office. Obviously, the role they play is irreplaceable. What we're trying to do is help to demystify the process for the students. And I don't know, I think sit in for the role that parents often play. You know, I came from a nice middle-class family, both my parents had attended college, and so when it came time for me to apply to college, no one had to explain to me what a FAFSA was, or, you know, the value of the SATs, or how to narrow down your college choices. My parents held that role for me, but because so many of these kids that we work with will be the first in their family to go to college, we find that there's a need to give them a little bit more support in actually working their way through the process.
We'll be looking at other types of classes, from tech class to music class, and maybe more, in coming episodes. For the GNET TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Merck Forest, located at the top of Rupert Mountain, was the place to be for amateur, and maybe not so amateur, naturalists and biologists on the weekend of September 12th and 13th, for their annual BioBlitz. That's where those whose curiosity about what lurks in the trees, bushes, ponds, and other locations across the nearly 3,200-acre nature preserve gets them out and armed with nets to capture and document those insects, lizards, or other species before releasing them back into their world. They do that through taking a photo of their findings and uploading it to an online app known as iNaturalist, which allows others to check the picture and verify what kind of species they may have found. Nathan Sharp and Madison Alderman were two who came to search and document their discoveries.
So this is a species of dragonfly called a darner. I'm pretty sure it's a variable darner. You can tell because of those four little spots on the side there. Most of the other dragonflies of this size have stripes. And it was just cruising around the pond over here. And it's one of the really, really beautiful species of dragonflies that we have around here. Pretty closely related to the one Tim was just talking about that was the first record for this area. These are just really, really brightly colored dragonflies. Some of the largest you get around here. And there's a couple more cruising around this pond, so I'm gonna see what else I can get in the net.
What happens next?
So I'm gonna take a couple photos of this guy, one from the back here, and then one from the side to show all the different features that are needed for ID. And then I'm gonna put those up on iNaturalist where someone else can confirm that it is the species that I think it is, or let me know if I'm wrong. And yeah, this could very well be another record. This is probably a new record of the species for Merck Forest. It could very well be another new record for the county.
So where'd you find this one?
Just flying over there.
Oh, so I think this one's a meadowhawk. So there are these little red dragonflies that are often out and about until as late as October or November. I think this one might be an autumn meadowhawk based on, I think, the color of the legs and also generally what season it is, but there's a couple other similar species. Yeah, you'll see these guys bouncing over fields and meadows for the next few months.
So where'd you find it? Over in the bushes there or somewhere?
Yep, in the bushes. I was looking for frogs and he was just kind of floating around my head. Gotcha! Hi, rodeo! Oh, you a big one. Eastern newt. That's a big one. Look at that tail.
This is the second year Merck Forest has held a BioBlitz, and Tim Duclo, Merck Forest's conservation manager, explained how it worked.
Yeah, essentially it's as simple as just taking a photo of a live, non-captive organism and capturing where it was found, where it was seen, the date and time, and then just sharing that online through iNaturalist. You yourself, you don't even have to identify what it is. Somebody else can see your photos and your notes, and then they can tell you what you found. So it's useful for people who are interested in kind of learning what is here to be found before they arrive. And it's also useful for us in doing ecological monitoring and over time, your observations, you can identify what hasn't been seen in a while and may be lost, and in which case we can search it back out. Or that might be telling us a story about how the population is faring. It also tells a story as to, like, you know, the overall level of biodiversity on the property. And in theory, the more biodiversity you have, the more healthy your ecosystem is. So just the pure fact of finding as much as possible really tells a story of how rich the ecosystem is here. Beyond that, the data, like many citizen science data platforms like eBird, for example, it's downloadable and usable by scientists for monitoring the changes in distribution of species across the region, changes in the phenology or the timing of different life events. So, for example, you know, if you captured photos of a particular plant, the information on the date and the time in which you found those plants flowering tells a story. You know, you can look over time at changes in flowering as the climate changes, for example. This year we used observations from last year to design a study of bees and bee communities across the property. We looked at spring ephemerals and, you know, documentation of what was seen last spring to kind of inform our study efforts. So there's a lot of use for what we're gathering here.
But you don't have to wait for the BioBlitz weekend to scratch your inner naturalist. You can go up to Merck Forest, or anywhere for that matter, and snag a member of the wildlife kingdom, as long as it cooperates with you long enough to let you take its picture and post it to the iNaturalist app. Who knows? Maybe you'll find something that no one thought was supposed to be there. It's happened at Merck Forest. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.